Computer, this is Data.
I'm an android. I'm
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Hello and welcome back to the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. My name's Tom Z, joined as always by my man Tim, aka Krangers McBasketball. And Tim, we have finally started this 2021-22 season with Lakers Media Day. I just want to say congratulations to all the Lakers fans out there. A lot of energy. I'm sure it's only made everybody more hyped for the season. You know, it's hard to like take anything away when Anthony Davis and Frank Vogel are directly saying opposite ideas. We can read in what you want, but it's really exciting. And I want to say all that blood we spilled, all the tears we spilled, making these memes of, you know, Photoshop jerseys. This is what it was all for. You know, maybe 10 years too late for some of these players. But that picture with Rondo and Russ and LeBron and AD and it's like 7 or 8 guys that are just Hall of Fame basketball players. You're like, huh, people don't think this is going to work.
Yeah. Well, shout out the Grant Goldbergs of the world putting those Photoshops together. Shout out everybody, you know, planting those seeds years and years and years ago, bothering everybody else on NBA Twitter for these silly Laker fans thinking they can get whoever they want and go after these guys. And you know what? We got LeBron, then we got AD, and now we brought the rest of the crew along. So great media day. Got me excited. We just spent 20 minutes recording like a 15-second sound clip. These guys had like one take to get it right live, and they killed it. It was great seeing them in those freaking yellow jerseys they need to fix. But I'm excited. I'm pumped, and the team's practicing now. So now that I'm seeing it, now it feels real in that the pages turn. This is a new season, and now I'm trying to think of like what this team could be, and we're here today to share some of those bold predictions with the folks.
Yeah,
definitely. We have some high hopes.
We do. We have 3 bold predictions each. Hopefully not too first takey here. These are more, you know, how we do these predictions, looking at what's likely to happen and kind of past, you know, data from Tim's website, B-Ball Index. But yeah, I just wanted to quickly, you held it down. You did some notes on the media day. I had mentioned before, like the AD Frank Vogel thing. I want to go through a couple quick talk hitters here, Tim, before we start. Just see if you have any more thoughts since the last time you talked to the audience. So we got that report about, you know, the possible start starting lineup with DeAndre Jordan, Trevor Ariza, and Wayne Ellington. Mm-hmm. Or was that it? No, it was AD at the 5, right?
AD I think at the it five was Bron, AD, Russ with Ellington and Ariza.
Gotcha.
I think.
Yeah, so AD at the 5, that's a potential kind of starting lineup. We also heard that DeAndre Jordan was running with the starters in a Kendrick Nunn 2 situation. So we've talked about some of these lineups before, Tim. But I want to also throw in the quote that Frank Vogel's talking about spacing and defense. And a great thing about your site there is you can just plug in a, you know, a head plot chart with those 2 different, you know, stats kind of quantifying. Oh, Ken Bazemore. Hello, Mr. Top Right of the chart. So I don't know. Any of those topics you want to hit or anything kind of come out in the last couple of days that you found interesting?
I think how much we've seen and heard, and I think we'll continue to hear different starting groups thrown together in different lineups, is exciting and it's fun. And I'm more just interested to see how it progresses because I don't think there are too many wrong answers for how the team can start games. But exactly how they utilize players and what combos make the most sense is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Because like you said, like we heard Ellington and Ariza, which, yeah, like that makes sense. And then we hear DeAndre Jordan and Nunn running with the guys. I'm like, yeah, that can make sense too. And then Vogel comes out, talks 3-and-D, and like that's Kent Bazemore's music. So there's so many interesting possible angles this can go. And I don't think I'm going to be upset no matter which route they go until we get like way more information about how guys are being used and who's performing well. But it just, to me, speaks to how many good problems this team has They're just so stacked. They've got guys I'll like forget about on the roster and be like, oh, right, we have Rajon Rondo. He could play real minutes this year. Just like so much extra that's there. And it's just going to be about like moving the puzzle pieces around and making the prettiest picture, because there are so many different ways this team can look. And I think that's awesome. And when you have an old team, you kind of need to have that backup. And this team has the backup like locked and loaded, and it has me feeling really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. The more closer this season gets, you got 2 days, man, to the first preseason basketball. We're recording this Friday morning Pacific time. So we got only a couple days and then we can come back and talk real Lakers basketball. But until then, we have some bold predictions. Tame, where do you want to start? You want me to go or you want to go?
David Fizdale, head coach by Christmas.
I'm kidding. Steven, let me tell you why that is so wrong.
All right, I'll start us off. And my first one is going to be that Anthony Davis is going to win the Defensive Player of the Year for maybe what his first. It'd be his first, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's why. And this might not be the hottest take, but like our perception and Laker fans' perception compared to reality on where he is in the Defensive Player of the Year picture hasn't quite lined up year after year, and he hasn't quite been in that top tier of dudes from a voting standpoint like we would prefer him to be. But I think this year is going to be different, and the reason for that is he's going to play a lot more center, hopefully. If he's playing center, which I hope he will, that's one, going to help the half court offense, but two, defensively, is going to allow us to see just a completely different beast from Anthony Davis. I think he, and he talked about this, and I think we're going to see this, just that almost like revenge tour kind of season where like these guys have a chip on their shoulders. They know it's a new season. They got a new group of guys, but they know last year wasn't what this team needed to do. And AD wished he could have been out there to help his dudes in the playoffs. And hopefully we're going to see him come out with a fire. He seems like he's in much better shape. So he's surely capable. We've seen him be a Defensive Player of the Year player in the playoffs, but in the regular season, the path to him doing that is playing more center, check. Team probably switching more, check. Him being able to just fly around on the perimeter, on the interior, playing that, you know, isolation defense, blocking shots, getting rebounds. I think he's going to be able to do all of that. And I think schematically, the team's going to put him in position to play either switching or drop coverage, which are two coverages that are going to highlight his strengths. And I just see all those stars aligning. And this is a team that I think offensively, there are going to be enough mouths to feed that it'll be hard for us to get like an MVP from this group per se, or like an Offensive Player of the Year type of guy. But defensively, this is AD's group. And he is going to, especially with the perimeter defense probably taking a step back this year, he's going to have more opportunities to put up counting stats. And assuming the team is as good defensively as I think they can be, and that's really the key piece of this, he's going to individually have a ton of defensive impact and should absolutely pop off the screen. And I think he's going to be the Defensive Player of the Year.
I think so much of that and all of these awards are narrative, right, Tim? They're,
yep.
What's the best narrative? Oh, you know, last year, you know, Rudy Gobert, you know, probably rightful winner. You know, Anthony Davis didn't play. You got Ben Simmons, maybe Draymond's in there. But Rudy Gobert was the anchor on a team that didn't have great perimeter defense. And he really did cover up a lot of mistakes in the regular season. And he was rewarded for that. And the year before, Anthony Davis came in second to Giannis. And that was kind of the, you know, the second MVP, the you're the best player in the league, like both sides of the ball, Giannis, here's your reward. It's not just that Anthony Davis wasn't good. The way Anthony Davis was utilized was as a helper, you know, kind of hiding in the worst front court player to go, you know, cover and allow the defensive like matchups for the guards to be really aggressive and go, you know, chase really hard and get up and take chances with your Avery Bradleys and all that kind of philosophy put Anthony Davis in a totally different role than what he would do. And my bold prediction, Tim, is not only like I think Defensive Player of the Year is spot on, but here's a quiz for you, or trivia, I should say. What do you know the most blocks Anthony Davis has ever averaged in a season?
Oh, geez. I don't think so. I mean, he's had like A-minus interior defensive talent grades, but from a blocks per game standpoint, I don't know, some two?
Yeah, like a raw rocks per game is 2.9 is his highest.
Okay.
You know, for those of you who play fantasy, you know, yeah, it's kind of what you got him when he was in New Orleans, getting blocks and steals and all this other stuff. I think he gets to 3 blocks a game because of the opportunity. Because not only like what all you laid out, the way it is the case for him to be maximized, but dude, he's going to get random blocks on like 3-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot more of them now because of that coverage you just described and the way that he can be aggressive and step up and explode into, holy shit, he's right there blocking my three, right? So like, is he going to block like a three a game? Like, no, probably not. But every couple games, it's an option where when Dwight or JaVale or you know, Drummond or Gasol, or they're just sitting back, not like, letting you take that 20-foot jumper, maybe I'll get a hand up if you pull up from three and kind of make it, you know, a little harder, but you're going to get that shot if you want it. And the way that Anthony Davis can, in a certain situations cover different strengths than the other centers we've had. We just haven't seen it as much. You know, I know it's been him in crunch time a lot, but seeing it on a day-to-day basis is a different thing. So
yeah, it just hasn't been his job in the regular season. We saw in the playoffs 2 years ago when he was healthy, 2 seasons ago, like 1 year ago, calendar year, when he was healthy against like Miami, just like in a you know, ball screen coverage, contain, and then also somehow recover and get back and like break up lobs, things like that, or like get to the dump off man and then block his shot after completely smothering the ball handler, like things like that he can do that other Laker bigs haven't been able to do. And this year it doesn't look like the other guys are quite at that level either. He's just a special talent. And I mean, I don't know, it's going from 2.9 to 3 isn't the ball. It's not the largest jump in the world, Tom. When did he put up that 2.9? I guess I'm thinking like, was 2.9, that wasn't last year, right? Like this is still going to be a pretty big jump for him from what we've seen from him most recently, correct?
So that was his third season, 14-15 in the league. And so last year he only averaged 1.6, and the first year with the Lakers 2.3.
So he's going to like double last year's block production is what you're projecting. Okay. All right. I like it. That's a ball prediction. I think he could do it from the perimeter defense taking a step back on its own, from his job changing to him. If he's switching more often, he's going to be in position to make those blocks on guards. If he's
just
in drop coverage.
Yeah.
If he's in drop coverage, he's going to be in position to block shots from a driving ball handler. Last year as a perimeter big, he's out there playing the 2v1s weak side. That's not how you block shots. You're going to get steals that way. You're going to pick off passes, but that's not a path to block. So I'm with you. I think, and these two go right along with each other. If he's succeeding in those statistical categories, that really matters for defensive player of the year. And talking narrative, Ben Simmons, he's been part of the narrative the past couple of years. He's not going to win it this year. We might not see him play much.
He's playing great defense for the Sixers. I don't know what she's saying. Defending them from a championship.
Exactly. And that is directly going to hurt Joel Embiid's ability as well. Like he's going to be in worse situations as a defender recovering, and he's going like that team success is going to go down. I bet Embiid's defensive success might go down a little bit, and that's going to hurt his case. Rudy Gobert, old news. We've been there. We've done that. I don't think what he's won 2 in a year. I don't think he's going to get the third. Giannis, we've done that. So AD's that guy. He's the one that's been in the conversation. And this is going to be the year, if things go well, where his individual success and the team success and the role and the counting stats and the narrative and this huge fan base is going to be pushing that angle. So I think this, like the stars are aligning, and a big piece of that is going to be those blocks. So then
I'm just going to say this is a narrative you're going to hear from media members, from national media members in 6 months. Well, you know, Anthony Davis, you watch him cover up all these mistakes by Russell Westbrook and just drag single-handedly this Lakers defense to top 3 in the league with below average or below average defenders on the wing. And Anthony Davis just in the back cleaning up everything. And that's going to be it. That's going to be part of the narrative. You could see it happening from a mile away.
He was so driven. He wasn't in shape last year. He was injured. He couldn't help his guys in the
playoffs.
The
short turnaround, the bubble.
He wants it this year. He's going after it. And we're going to see. We're going to see LeBron. We're going to see Russ. We're going to see him all talk about it probably. We see Vogel talk about it. These guys we've seen in the past, they'll push the award agenda. if think someone has a chance. So when they're talking about it, it's going to get it in the dialogue even more. And there isn't, at least what I'm looking at right now, I don't see a new exciting other option for a guy who has the kind of reputation and support and probably individual and team success like AD is going to have. So I wonder what those odds are. Let me try to pull up those odds.
Talking people into some Bovada bets over here, Tim?
Not sponsored. Reach out. let's see. Okay, he is third. So we've got Rudy Gobert plus 380. Ben Simmons plus 500. Don't bet Ben Simmons.
Are you serious?
AD plus 500. Giannis plus 800. Miles Turner plus 850. And then Embiid plus 1200. Bam plus 1400. And then it gets into Bam Holiday, Thibault, Ayton, and Green.
I think AD and Bam are the two most likely. Bam is just kind of like a slightly step down of AD, I think, as far as the same narrative. That team is expecting big things. If they get the number two spot unexpectedly, or the, yeah, like you said, the Bucks have kind of a championship hangover and they're not as locked in for 82. You know, I could see Bam being a top three DPOY.
I think he can be a candidate. I think it's going to be hard for like him or for Turner or for those guys who do what Gobert does to beat Gobert at his game. AD is still does some of that Rudy Gobert stuff, but he goes a step further with the perimeter defense, which Bam is also somewhat in that realm of as well. That's going to be like the new angle of like, all right, I'm not going head to head with Rudy stat by stat or, you know, type of impact, but I'm able to do what he's doing or close to it. Plus, you know, be this elite perimeter defender kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So if you know, the AD pitch is like the team success is going to be there. And then like, he's able to kind of beat out these guys who are either one or the other, either perimeter defense or shot blocking, because he's got both. So I like you. I like what you're thinking there with Bam, because I think that is going to be a similar avenue for him to potentially have success from a voting standpoint. So that's at 1400, Bam Adebayo. I don't hate that. I might throw a couple bucks on that. But 80 plus 500, I like, especially because Ben Simmons is up there and he shouldn't be up there.
That's insane. Okay, let's move on to our next bold prediction, Tim. What do you got for us?
So you actually went a little bit bolder than I did in your example there, but I'm going to say this Lakers defense is top five this year. I think the actual outcome or the range of outcomes certainly includes this, but is probably a bit lower. But I think if AD's playing defensive player of the year, AD stuff, and Bron is able to continue helping and putting out little fires. You've got Bazemore in there. You've got Ariza in there. Like, there are a lot of guys that can be good defenders if you put them in the right schemes and the right roles. And I am trusting that Frank Vogel is going to change both of the defaults. Like, if you just run out the same schemes as this team last year with player roles the same as they were last year for these guys, this won't be the case. It's going to take him optimizing things like we know he can and we trust that he will in order to get this out of this team. And I think it's well within the realm of possibility. And part of it is going to come down to like, is Russ going to make the right rotations that Russ needs to make? Is THT getting better with some of these things? How solid are Dwight and DeAndre Jordan defensively? But I think the team has the right shot blockers for a drop scheme. I think if they want to switch, they've got guys one through five that from a physicality standpoint are able to be in a switching lineup. Like, you can throw out Russ, Bazemore, Bron, Ariza, AD. And like, yeah, I feel pretty good about switching a lot with that group. And then there will be times where you've got great back pressure with dudes with Dwight Howard or DeAndre Jordan as a shot blocker. So I like that there are multiple ways this team can succeed defensively. I think that'll be important. Because you can't just, I mean, a lot of teams will just run out the same thing all year. You want to be able to do more than one thing well in order to have that kind of defensive success. And I think this team is capable of that. And we're overplaying how old they are and how poor defenders, or not we, but the general we is overplaying how bad this team could be defensively. I think Vogel is going to get these guys in shape. And I think they're going to be able to put up a top five performance is my bold, bold prediction.
I've grown more optimistic. You know, I think I was a little more pessimistic early on about this team's defensive potential. AD at the five, most of the time, it helps a lot. It's still, there's the pathway for them in the 2019 team way of just big and good rebounding with Russ and LeBron and AD and DeAndre Jordan or Dwight Howard. That's just fantastic rebounding. Holding teams to one possession and then getting the ball up the court quickly with head-to-heads and leak outs, you know. But I could also see, and this is a free bold prediction for you, Tim, LeBron making an all defensive team, because he is now the Anthony Davis role. If Anthony Davis starts at the five, he can be the helper who can eliminate opportunities with his IQ and anticipation. And if the backside's on it, I think he, you know, I talk about the energy bar. With Russell Westbrook on offense now, still have Anthony Davis. His loads hasn't been this light since, you know, the Cavs days. And even then, you know, Kevin Love wasn't a huge usage guy. He's mostly spot up, pick and popper kind of role for that team. But Anthony Davis can be more. And I think AD and Russ there, I think LeBron can be enabled to spend his energy bar on defense in that helper role if they really want it. So if you have AD rotate, or, you know, in the main play of a pick and roll, and then you have LeBron rotating, helping off the weak side, kind of jumping off of a guy who's not afraid to shoot, that can cause havoc. And if you have just a reasonable amount of size in an Ariza or a Bazemore next to him, that's really, really good, man. That even if Nunn isn't, you know, the best perimeter defender, or Rondo or Westbrook, like, both of those guys on the back end could be all defensive players
potentially. It'll be interesting. I think Braun and Ariza are going to be two guys that, with their ability to just rotate and help, they're going to make a lot of plays. Why I think it'll be harder to make a See, it's going to be tougher because they'll be away from the action itself. So unless they're getting a steal, it's harder to notice that. And we'll notice that. We're going to point that out. We're going to champion that. But it's going to be harder to notice that. You're going to see it in some of the impact metrics. But it's not going to show up the same way that, like, smothering guys 1v1 or blocking shots at the rim will. So I do think he can succeed well there. Getting onto an all-defensive team, I think, is possible. It's going to... Again, the team success is going to have to really be there, because in order to really recognize a guy performing that well in that kind of role, the Lakers can get the narrative train working, but they're also going to need the just like the stats. Basically, they're going to need like his defensive rating on off, like the most basic thing that people are going to point to, even though it's not the best. They're going to need some of those basic ones to look the right way. So that, you know, I think it's doable.
That was a free bold prediction for you. This one, Tim, you're gonna love. Keep thinking about this guard rotation over and over in my mind, and the way I've kind of framed it is, you know, there's a lot of the youth and kind of, you know, will this work, what is this guy's role, is more on the guard, you know, wing side of things for this roster. I think we know what DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard and Carmelo Anthony and Trevor Ariza are. You know, a lot of those guys more toward the 4-5 range, we know what they are. I mean, I think they know how their role is going to fit in. Some of these you know, Bazemore, Nut Monk, Ellington, it's unclear. I mean, we have an idea for sure, but whether they're going to succeed in it remains TBD. Yep. So if any or all of those guys struggle, I think Rajon Rondo has a very solid chance to get 1,000 minutes on this team. Tim's throwing things, literally.
No, Tom, no.
I'm just saying.
So
Frank Vogel said he could play 48 minutes a game.
He said he could play between 0 and 48, I think.
Hey, the fact that he didn't say, like, 42 means that Frank says he might play him 48 minutes.
So just to clarify,
that's like 20 games.
I'll give you an out. Speaking of 20 games, does this mean that we're anticipating that Russell Westbrook misses 20 games? I'm going to give you an out, an escape if you want to take it.
No.
No. All right. This is a mostly healthy Lakers team. Rajon Rondo, you are predicting here with this bold prediction, breaks through. the ambiguity and the inconsistency of some guys who maybe are three-point shooters, maybe not. We know they're not as good of playmakers as him. It's a path I can see. God, it's bold, and I don't know if bold's the right word I want to use for it, but...
Okay, jeez. For context for people, right, like Anthony Davis played like 1,100 minutes last season in 36 games. And that's obviously he's playing like, you know, 35, 36 minutes a game usually. So take that as you will. I'm kind of, you know, if you double that and half it, it's about 18 minutes per game across the whole season. But maybe it should be like 800. I feel like Rondo is going to play a lot more than any of us are expecting, in part because some of the younger guys. Is THT going to fill that backup one? Because I'm not super confident about that, right? Like, just yet. So, Monk, no, he's not. They might try it. Sure, maybe. Is it going to be just LeBron? Okay, full fine. But if Bays and Ellington shot aren't falling, or the defense is too bad when so-and-so or this or that's out there, if it's not quite working, you got Rondo. And it's going to happen.
So if you had to pick, let's say Rondo emerges and we're just picking somebody who, as a result, is falling. If you had to put it down onto one guy, is it Ellington? Is it Monk? Is it Nunn? Is it THT? Because I think Bazemore's going to play some wing minutes just because his team's so lacking depth in wings. But among those four guards, who do you think has the highest chance in this scenario to be beat out by Rondo?
I mean, definitely Monk.
Okay.
There's a volatility there that, and you know, maybe he got past it with, you know, we talked a little personal issues, some focus issues. I mean, I think I could see Monk being like traded at the trade deadline, you know, just for something that is useful because they tried it. There's high upside play there. Didn't work out, you know, shot wasn't falling. And then there's not much else he can provide if this team is where they want to be.
But he jumps and so high, Tom.
That's
have nice. You look at the highlights?
Sure.
I
mean, but I don't know.
I know, it makes sense.
How many minutes do you think Rondo's going to play? Because it's not zero.
Jeez. I think somewhere between like 500, 700.
Okay.
Is more than I would want, but I think realistic.
That's like what McKinney played last year, I think.
What was that? Sorry.
I think that's like about what McKinney played last year.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll look at the minutes again right now.
That's probably a decent floor. Because why he's such a good depth pickup for this team and why he has a much higher chance of just breaking into this rotation than other guys who maybe are in his roster spot on other teams is just due to the fact that his playmaking's as good as it is. Like, there's LeBron... And there's Russ, and there's Rondo, and then there's a pretty big gap from a playmaking talent standpoint on this team. And so if there's any injury situation, or if there are enough minutes where like AD is out there without Russ or Braun, and you need somebody in there to like run things, he's going to like, for sure, if that's the role you're looking for, if that's the skill set you need, he's going to be the guy. And Nunn and Monk are both dudes who kind of have some playmaking and some of the shooting, and both are, you know, maybe iffy depending on how big of a role or how much you're relying on them. So I can definitely see a chance for this to happen. What did the minutes look like last year?
So McKinney played about 250. Andre Drummond played 520.
With the Lakers?
Yeah. Marc Gasol played just under 1,000. You know, top two on the team in minutes were Schroeder and Kuzma, just under 2,000. So just for a little context for everybody, as far as I know, we don't talk raw number, you know, totals per season very often. I don't know. I think that's a bold prediction to say he's going to play as much as I said. Like I said, 1,000 is probably a lot if Russ doesn't get hurt, but it's always a possibility as well. Same for LeBron. I think if LeBron gets hurt, Rondo plays significantly more.
Yep.
So there's two pathways there. Maybe it's maintenance. Maybe it's just all kind of weighted toward the end of the season when they want him available for the playoffs if they need him. You know,
right.
He just gets 20 minutes a game for the last 3 months or something. So we'll see. Let's take a quick break here, Tim, though, and we'll finish out our bold predictions after this.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we are back. Tim, I'm going to give you my last bold prediction. I'm going to do two in a row. Just because I like making you feel good.
Snake draft.
That's right. Here we go. Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, Jesus.
Will average 13 points a game.
13. He was out. He was what, like 14, 15 last year?
He also averaged 13 points a game last year.
Oh, okay.
With the Blazers in 13.1 scoring possessions per game. So not bad. About a point per possession. But here's my pitch, okay? I see Melo getting just exponentially more wide open corner threes on this team. Just based on how they have downhill drivers and LeBron and Russ, you know, even if he's playing with some of the other units, you know, Russ and Nunn, there's going to be spacing. He's going to be open. He shot more percentage of threes as his total field goal attempts than pretty much any season in his career. It was like 28 the first year with Portland, and it was like 41. Last year. So he's starting to get where he's useful, right? He's starting to take more threes, shot a better percentage than his first year in Portland, took more of them, more, you know, as a number of his shots. He can't get to the rim for shit anymore. It was like 6% of his total field goal attempts, but we don't need that. So cue in, you know, more spacing or more, you know, attacking the rim than a team like Portland with Dame and CJ and kickouts for him. I think 13 scoring possessions per game is a lot for him. He was like their third offensive option. He's going to be offensive option, what, 4 at best?
Sure.
But that's still reasonable. I think we're going to see a lot more of the second unit dominated by Melo possessions, even if they're in isolation. So he's still going to get that isolation chunk because I still think the Lakers will be a great fast break team, but when they're in the half court, it's probably not going to be great at first. So for some of these units, dumping it down for a, you know, 18-foot Melo ISO isn't the worst thing. It's better than what the Lakers had last year in Kuzma and KCP and Caruso, all kind of scared to shoot, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I could still see Melo getting like 11 scoring possessions a game and being more efficient. 13. That's where I come to.
And he's helped by the fact that the position he'll play puts him at a position on the court where, like, he'll be the four with a five who probably is a backup five who's not spacing the floor. So they're going to be in the dunker spot, and he might just catch the ball at, like, the right wing, posting somebody up a step inside the three-point line, face up, and then try to go to work. And that's going to happen, and he's, you know, he's been good at that. He's still a good 1v1 player, and what last year at least was more effective than like LeBron and AD were in a lot of these like post or perimeter isolations, which is crazy to think about. So that as a backup option for the second group, I don't mind that. And also from the fact that he's going to be playing with a non-spacing big, he's not going to be probably doing as many like deep post-ups. He'll be just spacing the floor as the team's running ball screens or set or whatever. So he'll be fed these threes. And if he's open, he's going to hit those shots, and he's going to take those shots. And he's been a good three-point shooter for a while. And I am hoping that we see that three-point attempt rate, which is that the percentage of his shots that are threes, continue to rise and continue to build on what he did last year. I can see it. So the volume we're talking about, like 13 scoring possessions a game, that's about what Kuz had last season. Like Kuz wasn't like a top scoring option per se for the team, but like those possessions are there. Those possessions are available. So if he's out there between the drive and kick game of Braun and Russ and THT, who I forgot to call out, his playmaking is good, and we need to talk more about it. We'll talk more about it in the future. He's another one of those drive and kick guys, and Mel's going to eat off of those and get a couple threes a game just from that, and then throw in two or three shots on average maybe a game where he's just trying to make something happen with the second unit. And yeah, I could see him getting to a 13 points per game and an efficient 13 points per game. How he gets to his 13 is going to really matter in how I view it as like good or bad. But I think there's certainly a path for him to get to that based on the volume and the role he's playing. And that's going to help this team win games.
And I think there's a path for his efficiency to somewhat mitigate or, you know, even out his defensive liabilities with the rest of the roster around him, and hopefully the positive positions he can be put in on offense, making him more efficient. I think we might be underestimating how much Melo we might be getting. Maybe we just haven't talked about it, you know, but I see this happening, you know, and AD's out. It's like LeBron and Russ, throw Melo in there, you know, whatever. Like, I could see a lot of weird lineups like this. There's a lot of weird, you know, pieces that could be fit. But I do see Melo playing significant minutes with some of these star guys because they just want to see it, I bet, you know. And maybe it'll work if he can shoot well and provide some better, you know, end of the shot clock option than Markieff Morris, someone like that. Because that's the role he's replacing for us, right? Not quite small ball five, but kind of that spacing, you know, four, because Melo played a little bit at the five in Portland, did not go well. So I don't hope to see that.
Yeah, I can see it. And he's got the guys around him that'll hold him accountable between the coaching staff and some of the star players on this roster. If he's not doing what he needs to do offensively, he's going to hear about it. So if he's like shooting over double teams on a lineup that has, you know, the 360 degree guys out there, they're going to let them know.
Just learn about that joke today?
I saw it and I just put it together right before we hit record on the podcast. So I get it now, but I didn't. The number changes for the jerseys, and yeah, I'll take my L on this one, but I'm okay with it. I'm going to work on the jokes and we'll be back to you, and we're going to have some more. But I like it. Yeah, I think it makes sense. I can get behind this Melo with the Lakers. I'm worried about the defense. His defense was like really bad last year. It was bad enough that you needed like top 5 to 10% offensive impact to make him a break even player. So that's what I'm worried about, especially if like the starting unit has like Ariza or Braun in the same kind of position, rotating a ton and putting out fires. He's going to be, you know, like asleep at the fire station, like, you know, hanging out, throwing darts, wow, there's fires all around town if he's out there in that helper role or perimeter big role. So that's what I'm worried about is the defense. And you just got to take the good with the bad, I guess, because he's going to get minutes just based on who's on this team.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on to your last one. What do you got for us?
So another guy that is going to get minutes based on the roster and based on Frank Vogel and based on what he can do is I'm going to say Kent Bazemore is going to be fourth on this team in minutes this year by the end of the season.
Okay.
The path to that is there are not many wings. If you're looking for a guard to play up and play the wing position, because let's say AD is playing five, that means Bron's going to be playing more four. You need, like, small forward, you need bodies. And Monk's too small, Nunn's too small, Russ isn't playing there. THT and Bazemore are the two guys that are going to have a shot with those positions. Bazemore's done it, and he can just be a 3-and-D type of dude, space the floor, play good defense. And that's what we've already heard Frank Vogel talk about, like, yesterday wanting. And that's what we've heard Frank Vogel talking about for years wanting. He's the type of guy you can plug in with a starting unit and he'll fit. You can plug him in with a bench unit and he'll fit. I just think how many lineups Kent Bazemore isn't a positive on the defensive end and just someone you can plug and play offensively allows him to get a lot more minutes on this team, along with the fact that there aren't many wings. And I think this is going to happen. As long as his shot's falling, he's got a really, really good chance. Cause, and then defensively, his defensive role versatility is really important. Like, he can guard the point of attack if we need him to. He can be a wing stopper if we need him to. He can be a chaser if we need him to. That's going to be important. And he's also going to be part of this team's identity with those running habits that they talked about recently, where he's someone that, like, when I did my film review on him with the Discord folks, we looked at it and, like, he's generating turnovers a lot. Partially because he's kind of like wandering and waiting for you to look in the other direction for him to be in your blind spot so he can come up and mug you. But he's going to generate those turnovers and that's going to directly feed to transition. So the more of those plays he's part of that end, like base steal, like a base poke out that Russ picks up and dribbles down and throws up a lob to Bron or AD, the more of those highlights, the more he's going to, you know, gel with this group even more. So I just think offensively and defensively, he is in a great position from a skill set standpoint, from what the coaching staff wants, and for just what the roster doesn't have to be playing a ton of minutes on this group and be part of like a playoff rotation as well.
Do you see him getting like KCP level of minutes, which is over the last, you know, 3-4 seasons, like any from 24 to 28, 30? You see him getting that many when in like ramp up time, you know, end of the season?
I think he can get up to the high 20s for sure. I think he can touch 30 if he needs to, just because in looking at the rest of the roster, Dwight and DeAndre Jordan, they're not going to beat that. Russ, Bron, and AD will, but then Rondo's probably not going to beat it unless there's some key injury, because he has some work to do just to make it up to those minutes. And then you've got a bunch of dudes who are just kind of, I think we're going to see the Lakers try different things with, between Nunn and Monk and Ellington. They're going to get their shots. Whether they take advantage or not is going to dictate what the rotation looks like at the end of the season. But by the end of the season, I'm thinking the Lakers will have that figured out, but Bazemore will have already had a solidified spot from day one because of his spacing and defense and because of the lack of the wing play. That over the course of the year, maybe his minutes per game isn't fourth highest, but his total minutes will be fourth highest just because he's something you can rely on as long as his shot is falling. I think that's the path for me.
I can't disagree with your bold prediction. I think the day he was signed, we said start Bazemore. You know, we got Nariza, Ellington. I don't think we'd gotten none yet, but you're like, Bazemore, that's a starter. I mean, I get what they're talking about Ellington in that kind of let's get him going, kind of let's get this guy, you know, two or three threes mm-hmm. in the first 4 minutes of every game.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, just having that pet play in the first game, you know, Wayne Ellington being a part of that.
Yeah. If you're starting Ariza, I think that kind of bumps Bazemore out too. Cause then you're looking at 80. Bron and Ariza, you're three and four, however you figure that out. And then Russ. So Bazemore as your two, defensively, he's not providing the same you know, value he would on a bench unit as your three. And with that two position, you can grab a better shooter in Ellington, throw him in there. And collectively as a whole with that group, your defense is still in pretty good shape. So I still think he can be part of a group like that. And that could be a really, really good lineup. But I'm with you where I expect the team to probably lean more towards shooting, given what else they have from the starters. And then Bazemore just throughout the 48 minutes is going to play a bunch.
Right. Yeah, it's the 12 minutes a game guy. You know, Avery Bradley kind of became this in the beginning. Just, you know, he just wasn't really much of a crunch time player. And when he was, it wasn't as
for Ellington
as tight. For, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That same kind of role, you know, try and get him going early. But I could see it. Bazemore's, you know, the shooting and defense, like we talked about, that's the player who kind of checks that box the best, in our opinion, and can play with AD at the five, can play next to Russ, you know, space the floor, get those turnovers. That's what I was kind of thinking too with LeBron. Blocks lead to fast breaks. LeBron using that energy bar. So we know he can get up if he's healthy. You know, we know he's got the timing. We've seen him do it before. If he has to do less on offense, get those blocks. Bazemore, everybody's aggressive.
Yep.
You know, get 20 points in the fast break every game. But you still have to score 85 points outside of fast break opportunities, right?
Like, yeah.
It's great that the Lakers want to be the number one fast break team. Maybe we can look into this, you know, as the season's approaching, but what's a great fast break scoring team? How much do they still have to operate in the half court, and how bad can that be for them to still like have a reasonable shot at winning a night to night basis?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause no matter what, you're still going to be playing like 80% of your offensive possessions in the half court.
Yeah.
So yeah. You can be real. Like if that 20% is going to carry you, you got to be crazy good there to overcome
right.
not being good. So that can't be your whole identity. Cause it will never be like larger than 20-25% of your total plays. So yeah,
usually even less in the playoffs, right?
Yep. Less in the playoffs. And less if you don't play good defense. It's hard to play poor defense, have the other team score and then
take
run
the ball
after
out of the hoop.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So those turnover generators, like a Bazemore, like a LeBron, that helps feed that offense. So even if in the half court, Bazemore's offensive contribution is like catch and shoot, stationary, just stand in the corner, he's going to help the offense from his defense leading to quicker looks. So I like it. I'm rooting for Nunn, and I think Nunn has a lot of potential and talent, and I'd like to see him break out. I just don't think that's going to happen early enough in the season for him by the end of the year to end up with the fourth most minutes. So that's why I am leaning Bazemore over Nunn, who I do still believe in, hoping, you know, we're not smoking the Nunn pack a couple months from now, but he's somebody I'm rooting for, because if he clicks and if he hits, he's going to have a nice breakout season as well.
All right, Tim, let's close out with what you're looking for this coming Sunday. You know, we'll not talk too much about it because still give this pod listenability, but what are you looking for specifically? Like who starts, you know, what AD at the five looks like?
I don't care about the starting group until the last couple games, I think. I think they're probably going to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall. And we don't even know, like, do we know if everybody's playing game one? Like, is Braun, AD, Russ, are they playing?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
If anything, for like 5 minutes.
Okay. Because it might be like NFL preseason where like there's going to be a game or two on the NBA side, translating the number of games where we're seeing the team operate more like what they want to be. But for the first game, I think it's just going to be like watching and seeing how these guys interact, seeing what the defensive scheme looks like, because we heard them talk about, and this is what you do when you're coaching, you got a new team. First couple of practices, you put in your fundamentals. You put in, this is our base coverage. Here's what we expect you to do. And we're going to work on that. And then we'll build from there. We're going to build, you know, you want, and this is something, I guess, more in college, they have like some coaches will use like an 80-20 or 70-30 rule, where 80% of the time on defense, we're going to do what we do. And then that extra 20%, we're going to customize to the opponent. In the NBA, it's a little bit less than 80-20, but we're still going to see, you know, what the team starts with is going to be telling for what they think this defense can look like. And if they're out there running catch hedges, I'm going to be concerned. If they're out there running drop coverage or switching, that's right along with what I'm hoping for. So that's something I'm looking at on defense. And then offensively, I want to get a sense for how will Nunn and Monk be used. Are they ball handlers or are they shooters? And then is Ellington a catch and shoot stationary guy, or is he going to be used off of screens? Those are some of the things. And that might not come until they have to build those plays into the playbook. But figuring out what roles those guys play is, to me, going to be important in figuring out how these pieces click together.
That's good. That's really good stuff. Yeah, I think looking at that starting lineup, I'm curious just if the defensive coverage is the same from the starters to the bench.
Yeah.
When obviously a more traditional center will come in, whether they start switching and then go to drop or keep dropping with Anthony Davis and just, you know, let him be a little bit more aggressive. But it's might not tell us anything, honestly. This might just be them in a glorified pickup game,
which
it always has a chance of becoming.
Yeah, there will be a lot of transition. There will be.
Yeah.
There's always we looked at this back when we did the Taking Charge podcast years ago. There will be a higher percentage of every team's plays in transition in preseason compared to the regular season. It's usually I'll have to pull up my old notes if I can find them, but there's on average it'll be like 3-5% higher. So if you see the Lakers getting a bunch of points in fast breaks, that's good, but we have to kind of adjust a little bit to try to figure out what it might look like in the regular season. But if they're doing it more, that is still good, and it shows us they're focusing on it, and likely they'll be doing it more in the future. Just don't try to compare apples to oranges and compare it with regular season stats.
Wow. Great way to end a pod, Tim telling people to not get psyched on a preseason alley-oop from Russ to AD.
Get excited.
Just look awesome and beautiful. Tim's like, don't buy it.
Get pumped. Yeah. Get pumped. Tom, did I tell you about what game day is going to be looking like this year with the Discord?
No. Let's tell this.
So it's going to be a whole experience. We're thinking like game day is a special day, even though it happens fucking 100 times. you know, during the day, I'm going to throughout the day earlier, just, you know, share a couple X's and O's thoughts. We've got some folks in there that have access to our B-ball index tools. They'll post things and say, hey, you know what? Here's the Warriors roster. Here's what they're good at. Here's what they're not good at. Here's what to watch out for. And just kind of get you ready, get you familiar with the foe in addition to, you know, the pod content we're bringing. And then directly pregame, we'll be in there chatting like keys to the game. We'll be voting on who we think is going to win the game, voting on what we think, how the result's going to go like against the spread. And then in-game, we obviously have our in-game chat. Maybe we'll do some halftime audio chats. We'll see, you know, if we're available. And then post-game, voting on player of the game, just chatting it up, venting or celebrating, and you know, sharing all that good content, all those highlights, all that stuff. So trying to have some sort of loose structure around it, but I'm pumped. We've got a heck of a group in there now. And they're getting amped up, and I'm seeing the activity. It dipped a little bit this month. This month is like the one dead month all year, but it's still super active, and it's ramping up more and more. So I'm pumped to see what that game day experience looks like.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. DM us, leave us a 5-star review on a podcast player of your choice. Send us a picture of it. DM us. We'll send you that Discord link so you can get in there and join all the fun. I was gonna say, Tim, are they like paying your salary? You just described like an entire website's worth of like pre-game post gamers, like,
so we're,
holy crap, man.
You know, we've got some smart people in there. We've got some knowledgeable folks that, like, if they wanted to, they could for sure be content creators in the Lakers sphere. And they're just like, nah, I don't want to do that. Like, I've talked to people and been like, hey, you're really smart. Like, you want to write articles or something? You want me to like start retweeting you? And they're like, no, I'm going to keep it in here. So we have that just like internal community of people. And we've found some folks that are going to help try to lead the charge with the different segments of stuff. So it's not all just like me on there all day long, because I do have other things to do. But, you know, whenever possible, even if I'm not in there chatting it up, they're going to be in there chatting it up. And it's a smart, knowledgeable group that, like, I learn from and I pull from. And it's helped me be a better analyst and see the game in better ways and, you know, check me, even though, you know, they're fans of this pod, but they're going to be honest. And if they think we're off on something, they're going to let us know. But we're going to have a dialogue about it. It's not going to be trying to dunk on each other. So that iron sharpens iron approach has been really great. And it's helped us cultivate that, like, you know, small army of people that, like, they know their shit, Tom. Like, this is not your normal Lakers fan base. And this is not just the average, you know, NBA fan base, I should say. This isn't pick a random fan and they're going to be out there like, man, this guy missed a sink and this guy, you know, his lock and trail wasn't good. Like, that's more our crowd. But, you know, we're also in there celebrating the wins and talking trash and make fun of other teams. So all of the fun, but with those added elements that make it a more enriching experience. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
Man, RIP your mention. Good job. Normal Lakers fans. All right, Tim. Well, yeah, thank you for all that you do on the site that's seriously using all your data and stuff throughout the off season. It's like a light in the darkness of content. We could pull all these guys' stuff up and I can, you know, look through your data, be like, ooh, you know, maybe Melo can average 13 points a game and just kind of create this whole fake world where it happens. And I tell you my justification for it and that, you know, it could be practical. So I appreciate that. Go, you know, check out B-Ball Index too, people.
Yeah. And another route to get into the Discord, if you want to support us financially, also head over to patreon.com/cranches and you can support the pod and you'll get into the Discord that way as well. And that, you know, throws a couple extra bucks in our pockets to support everything that we're doing and the time that we're taking for these podcasts and everything we're doing in the Discord. So. An alternate, you don't have to go that route, but that is a route if you wish to support us financially to any degree.
Absolutely. And yeah, next pod, we'll have Lakers basketball to talk about. So we'll leave it there for now, Tim. We'll talk to y'all next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.